This is James, and I'm sitting here with Caleb Hughes today. Caleb is a guy I've got to meet through our Baptist Association here in town. He pastors Spring Hill Baptist Church in Millport, Alabama. As we get started, Caleb, will you just take a minute and introduce yourself and whatnot?
Yeah, as you said, I'm Caleb Hughes. I graduated from the University of Alabama, so Roll Tide.
That's right.
Got my degree in psychology from there. During my studies at Alabama, I felt called to pastoral ministry, and sometime after, felt like the Lord was drawing me to Louisville, Kentucky, where I did my schooling for theological education at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. Did that for 4.5 years and got my MDiv there, and have since relocated and had my first ministry position, which we began just recently. We got one daughter now, just recently. She's not even a year old yet. My wife and I starting our family in that way, and now we find ourselves here in Millport, Alabama at Spring Hill Baptist Church.
Okay. So this, like you said, this is your first pastorate, and you're in Millport, Alabama. A lot of the people that may be listening to this may know exactly where Millport is. Some may not. So if you would just tell us a little bit about the area, about your church setting, and then just kind of how it's different from anything you've done in the past.
Yeah. So Millport is a very small town, at least in my estimation, coming from Louisville, Kentucky, and even growing up in the Birmingham area, not really something I'm very used to. That being said, I was really raised in a small town, but it's been a while. Small town Mississippi, but it's been a long time. So in a way, I'm getting back to my roots here in Millport. It's a small town living, like I said, pretty rural atmosphere. The church, though, is, I think that they would probably consider themselves to be a small country church, but in my estimation, I don't really think that that's the case. We have a church that is abnormally large considering the area in which we find ourselves. Millport, like I said, is a small town, but Spring Hill is a church. We have about 100 in Sunday school each Sunday, and then we had our Easter service just a couple weeks ago where we had about 170, I think, but on average, it's about 130 or so, 120, 130. So, in my estimation, I would say that that's a pretty good-sized church for the area in which we find ourselves, but I've only been here a short amount of time, so I don't really know what the law of averages are.
How long have you been here?
I've been at Spring Hill for just under a year. September will be 1 year for me, so I guess that's 8 or 9 months.
Okay. If you don't know where Millport is, you would drive through it if you come from Columbus going towards Fayette, and probably didn't even know you went through it. No red lights. Well, there is one red light downtown in there. Was that a caution light?
No, I think it's a caution light.
That may be a caution
light. No red lights at all.
No actual restaurants, I don't think.
Two that are half gas stations.
Yeah, actual restaurants, yeah.
Right.
No, I'm just messing. Millport, I have got some good friends from around here. And I definitely grew up in Gordo, so it definitely was not much bigger. But we did have at least one gas station and a few restaurants. No fast food places, though, it's the same in that aspect.
Yep.
One big thing I wanted to talk with Caleb about, because of that, one of the ideas we want to go with this podcast is just being a resource for those pastors and youth pastors, or just people in ministry altogether, that may not have had the opportunity or won't have the opportunity to go to seminary. So I wanted to talk with Caleb about some of the positive things that he went through in seminary, what were some of the negatives, and just really what has helped him the most going into his first pastorate.
Yeah, I think rewarding is the right word to use in this context. When I consider what happened for me while I was at seminary, I guess I'll put it this way, and I'll back up a little bit. If I were to be seeking out a family doctor for my wife and my kid and myself, I would probably want to go to a doctor that I felt like had a good education, right? Had an idea of what he was doing. Now, you can have a good education without having been officially educated in an institution, but probably the case would be that the person that you'd want to go see is someone that's been to med school. Mm-hmm. I'd want my pastor, just personally speaking, to be someone that I thought was well-educated. So now whether that means that they were raised by a mentor that is extremely educated, but they never had the opportunity to have a formal education, or it may mean that they have a PhD in something that I'll never even glance my eyes upon. either way, I would like for my physician of my physical body to have gone to some sort of schooling, and at least me feel like as the under person, as the patient, if you will, to feel like my doctor or my physician has a pretty good head on his shoulders and has an idea of what he's doing. I think you can say the same thing and make the spiritual connection there as well, that us as pastors, shepherds, we are physicians of the spirit in some mm-hmm. ways, that some people even use the metaphor that the church is a hospital for broken people, of sinners. And I think with the same logic, you can say that it's good for your pastor to be someone that you think and have some security about. They have a sharpened mind as much as they have a sharpened heart. Mm-hmm. Most importantly, we want our pastors to be people that are spiritually sharp and have a strong fellowship with the Spirit and fellowship with the Lord. But there's also a significant place for a sharpened mind in that way. So I think that in that way, it's important. It was important for me to go to seminary because I wanted to be someone that is educated, that has any idea what I'm doing. Now, as far as my experience in seminary, some of the positives, I tell people pretty openly that I would say that I really didn't even understand how to read my Bible until I got to seminary. Now, I could have gone and skipped seminary and taken up a pastorate and relied on just my love of Jesus. But I think that I would have been doing my people a disservice because me personally, in my experience, I didn't know my Bible. I didn't understand that the Bible taught one long story as opposed to just a bunch of individual stories, but that it tells one story of God's redemption of a people group, a people group that would be called Christians. And God has been unfolding this story literally from the beginning of time. So, I mean, my positives from seminary, that would be the most vast positive. But you could go all kinds of routes here. A theological understanding of many different themes and topics, friendships that will last a lifetime, just the security of knowing that my people are thankful that their pastor went to school. But yeah, there's so many different things that I could go into. But I don't want to, you know, give the false interpretation that seminary was everything for my education. Again, one of the things that I like to think of is that my education while I was in seminary was threefold. It wasn't just in the classroom, but it was equally 33.3%, if you want to put it that way. One third of that would be in the classroom, in seminary. The second third of that would be just having iron sharpening iron conversations mm-hmm. with my classmates that I still have very deep and intentional relationships with. I learned more from them sometimes than even that I would in the classroom. And then thirdly, actually applying my ministry that I'm learning to go and apply it actually in ministry. So church ministry at that, whether it be in a youth setting or in a discipleship setting, or for us, we did some college ministry. It was equally important. A third of that importance would be that I was learning on the job, mm-hmm. so to speak. And a lot of people will attest, and some of our listeners will attest, that they got their most extensive knowledge of understanding of their job, not from a book or not from a training manual, but from actually going and doing the job itself. Mm-hmm. And I just think that there's something to be said as far as the positives of going to seminary, that certainly it's important for me. It was very important for me, but I would say that equally I learned a lot of stuff from the conversations of my peers, my classmates, and my friends now, but also from applying and doing on-the-job learning as well.
One thing that I've always felt like, and I don't want to mean this is to be negative towards anybody that's not or haven't yet, but I really feel like going to some kind of schooling, if it be formal or informal, was something that everybody should do if they have the opportunity, yeah. if called to ministry. And I would, just like you, you know, you're talking about one of the biggest things you learned in ministry was how to read the Bible. Shamefully, I can say that I did a year of ministry before I went to any kind of schooling. And looking back on that first year, it had to have been horrible because I didn't understand how to read the Bible like I really needed to. And not by the lack of people in my life trying to help me in that time period, but I'm not too sure what it was. But also, so you had some opportunity while you were in school to do ministry. And yeah. I have found that's been one of my favorite things about being in seminary online. I don't get that relationships that you get a lot of time that you had. I don't get to meet a bunch of people and things of that nature, but I do get to apply a lot of the principles and doctrines and things that I learn and go just being taught right now to my church and to the people there. And that's good for me because personally, I'm a hands-on kind of learner. Mm-hmm. If I don't retain a lot of knowledge, so unless I get to apply it, it makes it a little difficult for me. So would you say there's a big difference for you while you were in seminary and now?
Yeah, it's kind of a difficult question. I think that it's kind of like when I was in high school, I learned French, okay? And learning French would have been a massive overstatement.
Can you speak French?
Right? Absolutely not. Oh, to man. Say that I learned French is being very generous. I think that I read some French words and learned some vocabulary that I've all forgotten since then.
I took French in high school too. But I failed it badly.
Okay.
And so I had to drop out of advance.
See, I made good grades in French, and yet I can't speak a word of French. I really don't understand anything that I did learn. So seminary in some ways can be compared to that because not just learning Greek and Hebrew, which I had to undergo the gauntlet of, but with really anything that you learn, there is a need for repetition after the learning process is undergone. So learning is not just a one-time thing. We know this just from memorizing verses of the Bible. If you memorize something, a section of a passage, but you never come back to it and never refresh that learning phase, it's going to be gone, in a week or a month or so. With my seminary education, it's the same way. And I guess through college, through high school with French or, you know, what I know, it's a silly example, but with those types of learning environments, in some sense, I learned my lesson from then is that if I don't continue to learn and resharpen and resharpen and resharpen the things I learned in seminary or in church ministry during my seminary time or whatever it may be, then that information too will probably leave me. Mm-hmm. They compare going to seminary to drinking out of a fire hydrant because you there's no way you can get it all. But you try to retain as much as possible. And then afterwards, you still have access to vast amounts of books and articles and blogs and so many different things that can be constantly feeding your need for growth during pastoral ministry. Mm-hmm. So I think that some people would probably have post-seminary discouragement or depression because the way that they had been so constantly fed is gone. Mm-hmm. That being said, I don't miss the papers and the essays one bit, so I don't have that discouragement at all. But I can see how if that information has left you, it would probably feel a lot like a waste. So for me and my post-seminary life, it's been very important that I maintain my friendships, that I maintain those friendships as resources that I can still learn from, text conversations, the occasional phone call, just so that I can continue to learn from them. And then most importantly, that I'm still always refreshing, reading my Bible, studying supplementary books that are helpful in understanding my Bible. Without doing those things, I think that it would be very easy to lose that stuff. So,
unfortunately, when you read a lot of stats about people that come out of seminary, even school in general, most of them even show that they don't read another book for years.
Yeah.
And so what I would, my
withdrawals.
Question,
huh? They have withdrawals.
Yeah. And I'm sure that even after seminary, you got to be more intentional in,
yes,
in studying. Cause like writing, like I look back on my last semester, I think I read 12 books in a semester. So,
wow.
I don't think I would have normally done that. Mm-hmm. So obviously you're getting spoon fed a lot of the resources and stuff. And so I guess one thing that I'm pulling from what you said is that you really got to be intentional and actually, you know, looking out there for different resources and things as you move forward and looking over things again that you may have read beforehand.
Yeah, and not just that, but life after seminary, the first thing that comes to my mind, more than just, you know, refreshing the information and make sure that the knowledge sticks, is the need to just go and now do it. You know, you were called to the ministry for a purpose. So don't just sit on your education and let it have been in vain. For me, we moved to this southern area because we wanted to, Brooke and I both, my wife and I both, we felt called to this area because This was us. I mean, we felt like we needed to be in a church where we could be explicit about the gospel, because it's the power of God to save all who will come to believe. Mm-hmm. We knew that we were called to this type of demographic, and that there were just a lot of needs that we just personally and spiritually, I think, felt called to address. So we just needed to go do it. So we moved down here and began to get, you know, the resume out and start having conversations and building some networking possibilities. And God, in about 8 months, decided that we'd be at Spring Hill, I think. And it was a wonderful opportunity, and still has been a wonderful opportunity, to go and apply these things. Because, you know, out of all the classes that I took in seminary, only one of them was called pastoral ministry, and I think that that's kind of funny. But yeah, each of them, I think, had pastoral ministry undertones. Mm-hmm. But this occupation, if you want to call it pastoral ministry an occupation, has been the best pastoral ministry class, because you have real life going on. The people aren't projects, they're people. Mm-hmm. No longer are these just names on a sheet of paper, but they're real organic lives that I am responsible for under the Lord's provision. Mm-hmm. So it's just been, in some sense, it's been an extension of my education to now go and continue that education with real people.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because in one of my classes this past semester, one of the subjects we discussed was life after seminary. And it was talking about a list of things that seminary didn't teach these people how to do. As I was reading that list and I was talking to a guy about it, really the conclusion that me and him came to is that these were things that you got to learn when you get there, that you learn by experiencing them rather than being taught them. It's a little different than, you know, being taught, you know, different doctrines. You know, when it's a ministry experience, you just kind of got to get in there and do it.
Yeah.
With that being said, though, I know that may not be a good opening for the next question, but what is, out of everything that you've learned and all the classes you went through and all of that, what do you think has benefited you the most coming into a church as your first pastor?
And that's a tough question. I guess with a lot of answers. It's tough not because it's hard to think of an answer, but because there's a lot of answers to it. I would think probably twofold. The first thing would be most foundational, which is that we have to be explicit about the gospel. I think in my first pastorate, my current location in this geographical location with the Bible Belt Christianity mentality, is that in my experience, I've noticed that a lot of us in the Bible Belt have started to assume the gospel, assume that the people in the pews can connect the dots from why did Jesus die for my sin, to what are the consequences of sin, to what is the origin of sin, to what is the consummation of the end of all things. Mm-hmm. And that is just the, like I said, the one big story of the Bible. And I think that we've started to assume that people just know that because it's the most foundational thing. But for me, I didn't know that when I was a layperson, when I was somebody that would sit in my pew. So for me, I think one of the main things is just coming in. And from day one, I preached through Galatians, because I think that Paul's ministry in his letter to the Galatians was, hey, it's all about the gospel. It's all about the gospel of inclusion of all people, that it's beyond favoritism. There is no favoritism, mm-hmm. Jew and Gentile. It's all about the gospel of Jesus Christ. And for me, I came in from day one and wanted to be explicit about that. So I guess one thing would be that it's all about the gospel. And in my education at Southern in Louisville, one of the little mottos or catchphrases is that we are serious about the gospel. And that, mm-hmm. it has been. And you think, well, that's kind of redundant. It's a church, right? And it should be redundant, but we can't assume the redundancy. We must be explicit. So that's the first thing. And then secondly, it's hard for me to separate these two things, but I would just say secondly is the need for discipleship. The church has in some places become a business model more than it is a church, in that you have one pastor being the CEO who casts a vision or presents a message. You can call it a mission statement or whatever you will for a group of people that are comparable to his employees. And then, you know, you go and as one man casts the visions to the 50 or 100 or 150, and then they go and they've been fed for the week. So they go and now go live the Christian life. And then they'll crash back into each other in a week on Sunday, and we'll do it all over again. But that has never been Jesus's model for discipleship, nor has it ever been until the context in which we find ourselves been the model for the church at large. But instead, Jesus's model was that he took a select few and started a branch of discipleship. And, you know, I mentioned that it's sort of like a business, but even businesses know, you consider their training, they'll take one person and then they'll have a class of maybe 5 to 10 trainees, and that one person will teach them the job. And even after the training process is done, they'll then go and put them on the job itself and say, well, let me just walk through you with this and show you how to do this. The key word being, let me show you how to do this.
Yep.
And I think in the church, we've lost that. But instead, one of the things I learned in seminary was to come in, be intentional about the gospel, and explicitly disciple my people to what we'll take the model of, if one takes three and pours into those three, and then those three each take three, and then those three or those nine each take three, well, then you're really starting a movement. I think that's how the early church got started in the first century. I think that was Jesus's model. And I think it's been the model for church discipleship up until just recently, over the last couple hundred years or so. And I'm just trying to get back to that and be explicit about that.
I'd agree with you on that completely. I was actually been reading a book since I've got done with classes this semester that I've had on my bookshelf for a while. And one thing that they talk about, and it really is perfect with what we're talking about, is, you know, you had Jesus, he had his 12 that he poured into, but three that he poured into even more in depth than that. Yeah. And then at the day of Pentecost, when they're in the upper room, you see that there's about 120 people in there. And so in Jesus' 3 years of ministry, he really only had 120 disciples that come from up it all. And so his plan wasn't to get a big group together and send them out. It was to get, you know, dedicated disciples to go and to do the work he's called them to do. And so, man, I agree with you on that. And great things to pull out of seminary, especially when you look at our churches today, and if you just have the conversations with the people in the church and you ask them if they've ever been discipled or taught how to share the gospel, taught how to read the Bible. And really, none of them really have a lot of times. And you know, that's what the church is for. That's what the church is supposed to be doing.
Yeah, and then once you start to do that, it's interesting to see the response, which is almost always, man, this just feels right. Well, I don't know why, you know, we weren't doing this in the first place. Or, I used to be at a church that did this, and now it's good to have that back. It's weird. It's almost like Jesus thought of it himself.
That's right. Me and Corey's actually recommended a book on the podcast called What is the Gospel?
Yes, by Greg Gilbert.
And it's not one I read in school or nothing like that. It's just one that I fell upon. And man, that book right there has helped me in my understanding of the gospel more than anything else, because it lays it out there in such a basic form.
That's right.
But anyhow, we'll move on to the next question. Good discussion already, and I think we're about 23 minutes in and got a good bit left, so it's going to be a good episode. But as we look at move from seminary to just where you're at today, just tell us a little bit about your church. No, you've already done that, haven't you? Just tell us about just how it is being in the first pastorate. I know myself, I'm actually serving in the church I'm at. I was my first pastorate, and there's some challenges that come with that, but there's also some just amazing fruit that you can see come from it. So if you would just talk to us about that for a little bit.
Yeah, I guess in a word, the one word response would be that my first pastorate has been overwhelming. But yet when we say overwhelming, we think of overwhelming in a bad way. It's been overwhelming in a good way. You know, I think that you can prepare only so much for something. I recently became a dad, and you can read books, which we did not do, by the way, but you can do all kinds of preparation for becoming a dad. But when it comes down to it, you just got to do it. You're not going to feel completely prepared for that. It's like starting a big job. And I think you could say the same for pastoring, is you just got to jump in. And once you have a piece about it, you'll never be fully ready. But when God gives you a piece about it, it's time. And it was time for me. When we got here, I say it's overwhelming because you start to see, again, there's real people. You know, they're real relationships and real people that need to be fed, that need to receive the gospel every day of their lives. That when we got here, I'm not much of a people person. People misread me on that and think that I'm an extrovert. I'm really not. I like to have my own time and my own space and be a hermit sometimes. But when I got here and I look out and see the 150 people or however many people were there my first Sunday, it just hit me. And I was thinking, man, I'm suddenly entrusted with souls. Mm-hmm. I mean, people that God has entrusted to me. And the overwhelming feeling was twofold. One, man, there's a lot of people that I need to get to know, right? But on the second part of that is, man, God has entrusted me all these people. What an amazing, overwhelming blessing. So while I've been here as my first pastor, it's been overwhelming, but I say that in a good way. It's been overwhelming in that God has tremendously blessed us, and our church is incredibly loving. I know everybody thinks their church is loving, but my church is very loving. They're very generous. They have loved my family tremendously, and it always helps. Church, if you're listening, it always helps when you are engaging with your pastor when he's preaching. Mm-hmm. And I have a church that engages with me as I preach. That means taking notes or nodding. We don't get too many amens, you know, we're not quite on that side of things, but we do, people engage, and preaching is not one way, it's a two-way active mm-hmm. participation in worship, and I love my church because I'm thankful to be at a place that supports me. Several of the people that brought me here on the search committee are my deacons, and it's good to have their support, mm-hmm. As well as the support of the church at large. And obviously, there's going to be exceptions. I'm sure they're out there somewhere. But God has been so gracious to have a church that loves me, loves my family. It's been a great place to raise my daughter and for my wife and I to get our start. So overwhelming, but in all the good ways.
Awesome. Yeah, you talked about your first time there. I think back to the first time I was at the church I'm at, and we're by no means the size of your church. We're a real small church. But two things actually came to my mind as well. The first one was I'm not good with names. I see somebody's face and I remember them. And so the first thing I thought of was, how am I going to remember their names? Because I'm mm-hmm. horrible at that. And the second was very similar to yours, is, you know, how much of an honor it is that God invited me to be a part of what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And that's an overwhelming thing as well. And man, enjoyed that. And just so you know, if you're listening, you're from Spring Hill. I don't know too much about your church, but I see it from afar, and I've seen it from the outside. And I know a lot of good people that go here. And I personally, looking on from the outside in, man, it's a great church for Caleb to be at, his first church. I know it's a supporting church, it's a loving church, and man, I know it probably couldn't be a better church for you to be at right now.
Sure, absolutely.
And I know that to be sure, because this is where God has you. So
that's right.
But as we get ready to end this episode of the podcast, we'll actually try to have Caleb on again at some point, because I got some more things I want to talk to him about in a different area. But before we end, Caleb, if you would just, if you have any plugs of the week, maybe a resource, a book or video podcast or blog or anything.
Yeah, a couple of them. I'm reading a book right now that has been by far the most helpful book that I've read this year. It's called Dangerous Calling by Paul David Tripp. And it's just it's a good reminder that you know, again, the church can be seen as a business, but I am more than an employee. I'm a disciple first. Mm-hmm. Pastors are disciples of the Most High, just like our people are. That our lay people and us are no different in that way. And this book is just reminding me that I am a servant of God, not just an employee of a bunch of people. But you know, it's just uncovering some stones that you don't really think about, or maybe you think that I'm the only one that deals with these things in my church or whatever. And it's been a very, very uplifting and encouraging book, especially for someone in their first pastorate. So Dangerous Calling by Paul David Tripp. And then the second one is a resource that I have found helpful for years throughout my seminary career and even now. It's the Desiring God website, mm-hmm. John Piper's organization. He's also got a podcast called Ask Pastor John, I think. It's a little 10-minute segments of difficult questions, you know, mm-hmm. things like, what does the Bible say about homosexuality or about polygamy, or just things like that where mm-hmm. you don't really know the best way to articulate an answer. And Ask Pastor John is that podcast, and it's been very helpful. But Desiring God has been a resource that has been tremendous for me. wonderful articles and sermon excerpts and things just written by his team that have been very helpful for me as I face difficult questions, apologetics, mm-hmm. things like that, just things that are starting to become more prevalent in our day and a greater need, the need to defend and know what it is that we really believe from all fronts.
Yeah, desiring God, I haven't referenced that one yet, but yeah, that has been for me the same, man. It's been such a good resource just to look at in difficult topics, or even one thing that I've enjoyed on their website is these holidays and things that come up, just mm-hmm. reading what what Piper has to say about them. I remember back this past year I did Advent. Mm-hmm. And so he has actually came out with, I think, 3 ebooks on Advent, and it's free through Desiring God. Yeah. And I pulled up those resources when I was preparing for all of that, because there's so many directions you can go with that. Great resources there that he mentioned. One I want to mention, I actually got 2, but the first one is it's actually a book I've read in seminary. It's called Grasping God's Word. It's by Scott Duvall and Daniel Hayes. It's more of a textbook style book. It's a great book, and it begins off by explaining the biblical translations and things of that nature, but it goes in there and it gives you a step-by-step way of how to study scripture and how to apply scripture and things of that mm-hmm. nature. The second one is for the pastors, or maybe even youth pastors in here. It's a book called Preach by Mark Dever. Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic book of how to prepare a sermon, what do you do beforehand, and it goes to even afterwards. But it, in part of that book, it also lays down a part of the hermeneutic process that they go through, him and another pastor. And it's an easy book to read. It's a quick book to read. And so maybe you ain't got time to read this textbook style. This one would be a good resource for that. Caleb, before we sign off, you got anything you want to add or say towards the end?
Oh, man, just for those that are, whether you're a layperson or somebody that's pursuing pastoral ministry or any type of ministry, whether that be on missions, just be a person of prayer and pray with expectancy. I think that in the West, in the Western Hemisphere over here, especially in North America, we just sometimes lack faith. We can learn a lot from our brothers and sisters in other parts of the world from that. And part of that, I think, is just having an intentional desire to spend time alone with the Lord in prayer. Just for me, even now in my season of life, is being more intentional about that and wanting to give God my time. You know, we're so fast-paced and quick and clouded in our minds that mm-hmm. we rarely just stop. So I just encourage whoever it is out there that's listening to this just to be an intentional person of prayer, for sure.
As I've added in most of our episodes, I want to add again, as I sit here with Caleb, Caleb's graduated from seminary, serving at a church. I'm in seminary, serving at a church. But we do not pretend to have all the answers.
No way.
But we do want to advocate a conversation between pastors that may encourage you in whatever season of life God may have you in.
Yeah, sure.
This has been the Everyday Ministry Podcast, and we're glad you joined us. Have a good day.
If you're encouraged by what you hear, please go like our Facebook page, share the episodes, and rate the podcast on iTunes. Don't forget that a new episode drops every 1st and 3rd Mondays. Our prayer is that these episodes are an encouragement to you and that you would be faithful in the ministry that God has placed you in.